Hey everybody, we are chatting about the Milwaukee Bucks on the Journal Sentinel Milwaukee Bucks podcast, Eastern Conference Finals edition. Of course, the Bucks learn their opponent here will be the Toronto Raptors with Game 1 tonight, Wednesday night. Wanted to let you know what you're going to hear in this podcast. I chatted with Matt Velasquez, Journal Sentinel beat reporter. We did have some tech issues early on. He sounds crystal clear. Skype's working great. And then internet went down and we had to go over the good old-fashioned cell phone line. So there will be a little bit of a jarring change in quality of his voice. But don't worry, you can still hear everything he's got to say and it'll sound just fine. Just be aware that that is coming. Also, I want to remind you that you can find us, this podcast, on Stitcher, Spotify, or Apple Podcasts. Leave us a rating and review. Let us know what you think. You can find me on Twitter at JRRadcliffe, JRRADCLIFFE. Should be no problem to find Matt Velasquez as well. Love those ratings and reviews on Apple Podcasts. Those are huge for us. They really help us reach a lot more people. We know you're excited about the Eastern Conference Finals. Let's chat with Matt about the matchup ahead. Milwaukee Bucks, Milwaukee Journal Sentinel podcast, joins you on the day of the start of the Eastern Conference Finals. The Milwaukee Bucks and Toronto Raptors will kick things off Wednesday at Pfizer Forum in Milwaukee. Game one, very excited town we have here. And on the other line, I have Matt Velasquez, Milwaukee Journal Sentinel beat reporter for the Milwaukee Bucks. And Matt, we learned it was the Raptors on Sunday night after Kawhi Leonard hit the rim four times before his game-winning shot dropped through in Game 7 against the 76ers. What were you thinking as you were watching that play? I'm sure you were watching that in real time. I imagine you freaked out like the rest of us did.
I did freak out. My wife usually doesn't watch a ton of basketball with me, and she was there on the couch, and both of us were ignoring our kids, who should have been in bed at that point. But yes. Neither of us wanted to actually do the whole like putting them to bed thing. So we just watched the game, and it was fantastic, and I greatly enjoyed it. I was glad that it didn't go to overtime, because I was have to have the discussion of who was going to put the kids to bed during overtime, because I didn't want it to be me. But I was also very glad to be able to finally cancel my Philly hotel. I booked one in Philly and Toronto just in case. Wow. I cancel Philly, book Toronto flights, and get cracking. So I was excited to get that settled and be able to move on with my life.
Toronto hotels have got to be more expensive than Philly hotels, right?
Untrue.
Untrue. Wow.
Untrue. Yes, Philly was greatly expensive. I would have had to stay further away, like by the airport. There's just a ton of graduations and stuff in Philly, like every weekend with like the Big Five and all that. So the hotel's really bad. Toronto, I got the hotel that I usually stay in. It's a nice little walk from the Scotiabank Arena. It's in the parlance of Canadians, it's about a kilometer away. It's a nice walk through downtown. I'm excited to finally get to experience Toronto in the springtime as opposed to when it's bitterly cold. I was there during that polar vortex time this season where it was like negative a million everywhere. Yeah, that's the last time I was in Toronto, and I still loved it. So I'm very much looking forward to enjoying Toronto in non-freezing conditions, which I don't think I've done yet.
Yeah, I would love the same. That's supposed to be a phenomenal city. I haven't updated my passport in like, I don't know, 15 years. So I don't think I'll be going anytime soon. But the Bucks will be headed there after games 1 and 2, Wednesday and Friday night at Pfizer Forum. And this is the matchup I think everybody kind of hoped would happen in terms of high quality of basketball. The top two seeds in the Eastern Conference. You have the 1 and 3 seed in the Western Conference. And I think this matchup is certainly... We kind of have this consensus. These are the two best teams in the Eastern Conference. I know that TV executives aren't going to be thrilled to see Toronto and Milwaukee represented in the Eastern Conference Finals. But we'll start with Kawhi Leonard. I mean, that's what you have to start with if you're talking about Toronto. He makes the shot. He is their version of Giannis. He is their best player by far. He's having a sensational postseason. He has just been on another level. I don't know how you... I mean, the Bucks just got through a guy, Kyrie Irving, who can take his game to another level and pose a ton of problems if he's on. Kyrie wasn't on, for the most part, in that Boston series. But how is Kawhi a different challenge? Or maybe he is a similar challenge to what Kyrie brings to the table.
I just think that so far, the Bucks have played against a bunch of teams that don't have like super high level wings, or at least like their best player isn't a high level wing. You look at the Pistons, and I don't know who their best player is other than Blake Griffin. So and he didn't play against 1 and 2, but it wasn't a wing. And the Boston Celtics, their best player is obviously Kyrie Irving. They do have Jason Tatum. They do have Jaylen Brown. They do have some good wings, maybe really good wings. But it's a very different situation when the best player on the opposing team, is at that position, and that's what Toronto has in Kawhi Leonard. And that's going to be the job of Chris Middleton throughout the series, at least primarily. Everybody at practice, said, oh, it's a team thing. Everybody has to work together to slow down a player of Kawhi's caliber, and I get that, and that's certainly true. But the job is going to fall to Chris Middleton more often than not. That's what happened in the 3 games this season in which Kawhi played. Chris Middleton, the majority of the time was the guy who defended him and did so fairly well. I think Kawhi shot in the low 40s percentage-wise when Chris Middleton was the primary defender. He wasn't necessarily creating a whole lot of offense in those situations, though the Raptors' offense was operating at a pretty high level in terms of its offensive efficiency. That matchup will be something that is crucial for the Bucks. If they can have, games where they can keep Kawhi off the free throw line, they can run him off the three-point line and get him into contested mid-range twos, a shot that he generally likes and is quite proficient at, they might live with that, And so you look at, the way their defense is set up and the way that Middleton, fights around screens and is able to keep up with Kawhi and is able to match him physically in terms of size and similar strength. That's going to be a huge undertaking, but I'm interested to see how the addition of Marc Gasol, someone who didn't play against the Bucks at all this season, who didn't join the Raptors until after the 4 games between these two teams, how that affects things and how that changes things. We'll have to see how the Bucks bench depth is able to, whether or not they're able to continue what they've done and bring a really noticeable, important spark throughout the game and playing a lot of minutes versus Toronto's bench that hasn't been used as much and hasn't played well. There's kind of a lot of different things going on in the periphery, but of course Kawhi's right at the center of it.
I get the feeling Kawhi is going to just pretty much get a lot of what he wants being guarded even by Chris Middleton, and the Bucks will live with that if they can shut down everybody else. One of those next players up is Pascal Siakam, and that's a guy that we've talked about a little bit this year, but I'm going to guess the vast majority of big casual basketball fans are still learning this guy's name. Maybe they don't know how good he has become, both offensively and then in defense. I got to think he's the guy who's going to be largely responsible for trying to shut down Giannis. I'm sure they're going to try multiple things. But what have you seen what happened to Pascal Siakam? He was a name I don't know if I'd even heard prior to this season, and now he's honestly a borderline star in this league.
Yeah, he could have been an all-star. I mean, there's no question about that. I think Eric Bledsoe could have been an all-star. Those are two guys who, if they expanded the all-star rosters any further, I think that both of them would have gotten serious consideration. There's no doubt in my mind that Pascal Siakam will be the most improved player this year. That's who I voted for. That's who basically everyone I've seen has voted for as the most improved player. If you're a Bucks fan, you follow along, you watched him drop 30 points at Pfizer Forum earlier this year in the Raptors' lone win in this series. He's just somebody who is long, athletic. He is a lot more polished in terms of finishing and scoring around the rim. He started to heat up, shooting a really strong percentage from the corners on three-pointers. He's really still reticent to shoot three-pointers outside of the corners and isn't very good above the break. But in the corners where teams tend to leave him alone or have left him alone in the past, I know the Bucks left him alone a lot in that game in January at Pfizer Forum, and he made him pay. But he's somebody who, will definitely guard Giannis a lot and can bring similar athleticism and length and just, make things, a little bit tougher for Giannis. I think that over time, Giannis will figure it out. That's generally what he does. He is the MVP, or at least the front runner for MVP at this point. And so I think that, he will have some issues at times, with Siakam, who can hold up athletically to some of his moves and offer, different different looks to keep up with him. But I think that if Giannis is the one defending him, I think that's a huge help for Milwaukee, because he, you know, Siakam, of all the guys on their roster, you know, isn't the biggest threat in terms of being a jump shooter. So Giannis can stick near him, maybe, you know, slow him down and challenge him if he gets ISO opportunities or anything like that. But when Siakam's off the ball, Giannis can kind of just roam around a little bit. He doesn't need to stick right by him. You know, maybe keep an eye on him and be able to close out if a pass goes that way. But Giannis, as a help defender, is really where he's at his best. And so he can, you know, clog up the lane and, you know, keep an eye on Kawhi. And if Kawhi's getting downhill, Giannis can come in. And, you know, they'll generally live with a Siakam, you know, corner three or jump shot, you know, with someone rotating down to contest, you know, even if Giannis goes away. So I'll be interested to see how that matchup goes. Obviously, Siakam in transition can be really tough to stop. Same with Giannis. And just, you know, the way that those two guys go at each other should be really fun.
Who else should Bucks fans be aware of? We talked a little about OG Anunoby early in the season, and he has not been available in the playoffs. Serge Ibaka is a veteran who has been around this league a long time and had a lot of success in the playoffs, so that's probably somebody to be aware of. You did mention Marc Gasol, a new face on the team. He was one of those midseason acquisitions around the same time the Bucks picked up Nikola Mirotic. He's somebody that maybe Pau Gasol, who's out for the year, can lend some pointers on how to slow down his brother. Who else, though, jumps to mind that you really think the Bucks need to be concerned about?
Well, I think Serge Ibaka, I mean, we've seen it in the matchups between the Bucks and Raptors earlier this year. They're going to let him shoot all day. Like, they are not worried about Serge. I guess he can make some shots. Yes, he can make them pay. But overwhelmingly, that's been their strategy when playing the Raptors this year, is to really sell out on defending the paint, on sending extra guys when Kawhi gets going downhill, and say, hey, you know what, Serge, if you want to take, like, the most shots you've taken all season, go for it. Like, we'll see what happens. And so generally, like, he will shoot. He is not afraid to shoot. He will continue to put them up if he's wide open. And, you know, some games it's going to kill you. And, you know, other games, he's just going to keep, you know, throw up brick after brick. And, you know, you'll be able to survive that. You'd rather have him shooting those shots than Kawhi getting open looks. I think that's just, you know, elementary at this point. Yeah, so we'll see a lot of Serge Ibaka shooting if things go similarly to earlier in the season. I think Marc Gasol, he's kind of in that Brook Lopez role where he can pick and pop. He can shoot the three. He's very capable. He made a decent number of threes when the Grizzlies played against the Bucks earlier this season. But at the same time, like, at some point, like, the knock on him is that he'll generally just not shoot. Like, he doesn't want to take so many threes. If they keep leaving him open for him, he's going to pass up some good looks, and he's going to try and drive, or, you know, draw the defense and move the ball and swing it and all that stuff. But in the process, he's still passing up good shots. So those are all things to look for and to see if he's willing to continue to put up open shots if the Bucks, you know, continue to drop in their pick and roll coverage. I think Fred VanVleet is someone to keep an eye on, because he has had a pretty poor playoffs by his standards. His shooting has not been great. There's been times where he hasn't looked like he wanted to shoot. In Game 7 against the Sixers, a lot of the Raptors looked like they didn't want to shoot. Everybody kept getting the ball to Kawhi, and it took him putting up like 40 shots, basically, for them to win that game. You know, and he was confident in those shots, but outside of him and Ibaka, other people didn't always want to shoot, and Fred VanVleet was one of those. The Raptors bench, you know, he's one of the few guys who's getting consistent minutes off the bench, because they need somebody at that backup guard spot. But, you know, in general, this hasn't been his best playoffs, but he's been good against the Bucks in the past. And if he can get his shot falling and he can build up some confidence, he could be someone who could hurt them.
From a Bucks perspective, pretty much the big storyline is Malcolm Brogdon working his way back in. He did get to see the floor, scored 10 points in Game 5 against the Celtics. It was his first action in a couple several weeks. What do you expect from him? I mean, you were referring back to some of the games during the regular season. Brogdon hit a couple monster shots in a win over the Raptors early in the season, one of the big tone-setting wins of the season, maybe the biggest win of the season, and he was huge. So do you anticipate now going forward Brogdon will be in the starting lineup, will have a pretty full workload, or do you think the Bucks are still going to be tentative with him?
You know, I think they're still going to be somewhat tentative with him. Mike Budenholzer keeps talking about how he really, really wants to see Brogdon get game minutes. You know, he's seen him in practice. He's seen him in scrimmages. He's seen him, you know, doing all these different things over the course of his rehab, but he just wants to see more game minutes because there's no substitute for that. And I'm really interested to see. I'm kind of on the fence, but leaning toward the idea of him returning to the starting lineup for game one. You know, Bud hasn't given any inkling or, you know, indication either way. But I would lean that way. I think the matchups just make sense. Where you have Eric Bledsoe on Kyle Lowry, you have Brogdon on Danny Green, you have Middleton on Kawhi Leonard, you have Giannis on Siakam, and you have Brooke Lopez on Marc Gasol. Like, that seems like a very reasonable thing. I think it'd be a little bit more difficult for Nikola Mirotic to defend Danny Green, though he did acquit himself well against the Celtics and being able to hang with Jaylen Brown and be a positive defensive presence. You know, Mike Budenholzer talked about, you know, his activity level and how he was happy with that. And it was definitely a positive for the Bucks. So I think that would be the matchup if it did happen. It just seems like the, you know, the Bledsoe, Brogdon, Middleton, Giannis, Lopez lineup, it seems to make the most sense, even if Brogdon is on a minutes limit and is going to only play like 20 or so minutes or something like that for game one. He could start that way and you can, you know, kind of mix and match from there. I still wouldn't be surprised if Mirotić stayed in the starting lineup and had, you know, Brogdon coming in maybe in the second quarter and playing that 15-20 minute stretch in game one. But I think overall he's healthy. You know, he looks like he is back to where he was, at least in terms of, you know, general movement. And, you know, in that short game five time span, I mean, his teammates are saying, hey, he looks like himself. Like, that's the guy that we remember. So I think that over the course of the series, he will get healthier. He will get off that minutes restriction. And that's important for the Bucks because the more pieces you can have, you know, the better at this stage of the game.
I just realized I didn't mention Kyle Lowry when I asked earlier about other Raptors that the Bucks need to be concerned about. Obviously, he's on that list as well. This is a kind of a, I don't even know if I agree with my own premise on this question, but in the aftermath of the Boston series, the Bucks were ecstatic. The players were ecstatic. The fans were ecstatic. They played Paul Pierce on the big Jumbotron, which reminds me, we've got to bust out the petty horn for that. Playing his comments from after game one, after Boston had taken a 1-0 lead and how he thought the series was over. Play the petty horn.
Petty. 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 Petty.
That is an awesome moment in time. But that was a huge accomplishment for this franchise, to win the Eastern Conference semifinals, to win it convincingly. And now they're going into, you know, the next phase. I don't want to ask about their mentality. Of course they're focused on what's ahead. Of course they're going to be ready for the Raptors. They've had a week off. They'll have a week to prepare for this game. But what, I mean, do you sense that there is a level of satisfaction with what they've already done, that maybe this is just kind of the icing on the cake because we're in heady territory? This is further than they've been in a, you know, basically a generation.
No, I don't think there's any satisfaction. I think everybody is focused on what they need to do, what they need to do next. They're still very hungry. Yes, there was some enjoyment in beating the Celtics and moving on, as there should be. But this isn't where they want to go. Like, in the locker room, I thought that they were generally, like, normal. Like, by the time the media got in there, it wasn't, like, this, like, rowdy, excited, like, you know, like, locker room where everybody was popping champagne or whatever. This isn't baseball where every time you win a series, you just destroy the locker room. You know, they were like, hey, you know what, this is great, but we're only halfway to where we want to go. Like, I heard multiple guys say that. They want to win the championship. And they've got 8 wins down, 8 to go. And that's the general mentality. George Hill talked about at practice on Monday about how it, you know, maybe was good in a way that they got that kind of punch in the mouth from the Celtics, that game one loss by 22 points. And then they were able to respond to that. And now they know, like, hey, like, we can't just go into this series thinking that we are top stuff. we have to, take this opponent seriously and hit the ground running, because otherwise, we're going to be in trouble. And then that's something that, as the competition level raises, you don't want to go down in a series. You don't want to give the other team life. You don't want to have a game where you are just not yourself. You need to be able to be on point all the time if you're going to try and advance the NBA Finals or even win the NBA Finals. And so I think that they're really focused on the task at hand, on what they need to do, and they know they're not, where they need to be yet.
We talked before the Boston series. You said that the Celtics had a very good chance to win that series. They certainly showed it in Game 1. Bucks bit back with a vengeance and looked like the better team by far at the end. Clearly, the Raptors have a chance to win this series. They're a very good team and have given the Bucks some pretty good matchups this year. Do you still see the Bucks as the favorite, or is this kind of a 50-50? Is this a coin toss?
I still see the Bucks as the favorite. I just think that the way that they've played throughout the postseason, which is really an extension of how they played in the regular season, has been really good. The Raptors have played well enough in the postseason to advance, no doubt. But they've also shown more signs of weakness, and maybe they took on a more difficult team in the Philadelphia 76ers, a tough matchup for anyone. But they've also, been exposed a few times, and their bench isn't playing as well as they did in the regular season. They're just not getting as much outside of Kawhi Leonard, and Kyle Lowry's had some games where he hasn't scored well, but he still played well. But there's still just not a ton of production going around. And yes, their defense has been good, but the Bucks' defense has also been good. But they've still been able to put up points, and that's been the difference. Whereas the Raptors have had more prolonged lulls offensively, where they've struggled to find and manufacture baskets. So I think right now, if I had to make a prediction, I'd probably say Bucks in six.
Bucks in six.
It's not really for the culture. It's just more of like, okay, I was maybe overestimating the Celtics and underestimating the Bucks last series when I predicted Bucks in seven, just because I didn't think Boston was going to lay down like that. But I think that if the Bucks can play like they did last series, I don't see them losing more than two games. So that's why, and I feel like five would be disrespectful to the Raptors. I think the Raptors are a better team than that. But six makes sense, and I know that the Bucks can win Toronto. I've seen them do it twice this season. I know they're not afraid of that environment, that they can, really handle themselves at the end of games in that environment. They've done it multiple times already. And so I think that winning it in six in Toronto is something that can happen. And before we go, I did want to ask you, I saw your story about 2001, and you talked to Darvin Ham and a bunch of other people about the conspiracy of, yes, of 2001. Why don't you just kind of take us into that one? Because I think that's a topic that is near, and I don't know, the dear to a lot of people around Milwaukee.
Yeah, I did post that story at JS Online on Monday. It's a look back at the 2001 Eastern Conference Finals. The one word everyone thinks about when they think of that series is conspiracy. There are a lot of people who believe in their hearts that the officiating, which seemingly on paper favored Philadelphia in terms of total fouls, the Bucks got hit with some technicals. There's the famous incident of Scott Williams having a flagrant reassessed as a flagrant two, and him learning he was suspended for Game 7 of that series with the Philadelphia 76ers. A lot of fans still really, really bitter about that. Obviously, part of that is that the Bucks have not been back to the Eastern Conference Finals until this year, so there's been a lot of time to stew over that particular series of events. Every comment I've gotten on this story, and I did talk to several fans who were there. I talked to Darvin Ham, like you said. I got some of the old quotes from Ray Allen, who famously said it behooved the NBA to see the bigger market 76ers in the NBA Finals. That was where they ultimately wound up against the Lakers. All the comments I've gotten are, with rare exception, are people who really do believe there was a conspiracy. I personally do not fall in that camp. I go back and look at that Scott Williams elbow that he threw to Allen Iverson and think he probably should have been reassessed as a flagrant two. It was a vicious thing. But there a lot of people are still very bitter about that. So it was fun to go back and talk about it. Hopefully this, for their sake, hopefully this year's Bucks team we'll give them a memory that sort of erases the heartbreak that came with 2001.
Yeah, it was fun just reading the comments that you got from Darvin Ham in particular. I remember seeing you like doing that interview at the practice facility one day. I was like, oh man, it's gonna be fun. Yes. So it was definitely good to just kind of hear his perspective now. He obviously, it's the guy who replaced Scott Williams in the starting lineup after, you know, in Game 7. After that Flagrant was upgraded, and you know, he obviously got a bunch of fouls called on him quickly, and he had some feelings about that. Though, you know, like multiple people that you quoted in the story, they kind of just said, hey, like, we don't talk about that anymore. Which
is
kind of funny.
Yes, you can go back and listen, by the way, to my full conversation with Darvin Ham, including the convo about 2001. That was a few podcasts ago. As for this one, I think we're set to go. Matt Velasquez, TNT is going to be here. That means Charles Barkley is going to be on the plaza with the rest of that crew. I'm hoping to chat with Ernie Johnson, who's got some Wisconsin ties, who runs that show for TNT, and get something up on him. So it's going to be unbelievable. I can't wait to see what it's like inside Pfizer Forum for the first Eastern Conference Finals game in Milwaukee since 2001.
Yeah, it's going to be fantastic. The crowds have brought it all postseason, and I'm sure, you know, with all the standing room availability and just the tickets on the secondary market, this place is going to be it's going to be full, it's going to be loud, it's going to be fun, and I'm just, you know, buckling in for an exciting series.
Read everything Matt Velasquez has to say at jsonline.com or in the good old-fashioned Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, the paper that comes to your door. He will be covering the Bucks. He's an international traveler for the Eastern Conference Finals. He'll be in Toronto as well. Matt, thank you for joining us. We're going to chat with you again real soon.
All right. Can't wait.
Thank you to Matt Velasquez for joining us today. He mentioned my 2001 Eastern Conference Finals look back at jsonline.com. That is for subscribers only. We've got some content that is behind the subscriber paywall. But don't worry, if you want to be a subscriber, it's a pretty easy thing to do. For 99 cents, you get the first 3 months of Journal Sentinel digital access. You get access to all of our subscriber content. We have a lot more than we used to up on the website. So this is a good time to dive in. It's super, super cheap. And even if the prices go up, you'll find that it's very reasonable after those first 3 months. But especially if you just want to focus on what's left with the Bucks coverage, you might as well just jump in for 3 months, right? If nothing else, get that digital access at just 99 cents and you'll get full coverage. All of Matt's post-game analysis pieces, they usually go now behind this paywall. So you definitely want to get the full coverage there, because Matt's the best in the business when it comes to the Milwaukee Bucks. You can also find my story on a look back at the Save Our Bucks campaign. That's up on the site at jsonline.com now. That's available to all readers. About 5-6 years ago, a guy named Paul Henning was kind of the spokesman for the whole operation, but there were several people who really put forth the idea that the Bucks needed an ownership change, a change in who was leading the way in terms of front office. They needed to get a high draft pick, and they needed a new arena. So these guys worked pretty tirelessly to push those ideas in different ways, to get people on board, even just as a community, knowing that this is still a basketball town, even though the product hasn't been good, and really sort of framed the conversation. Obviously, it didn't go directly like they wanted. They were very excited about the 2014 draft at the time, which at the time looked like a great draft and has not turned out to be the case. Jabari Parker was the Bucks' sort of infamous pick, I suppose, in that draft, but it's still a cool look back. The Bucks obviously have gone from a very dark place, a 15-win basketball team, to an NBA championship contender in just 5 years. So whether or not it went directly as the Save Our Bucks campaign thought it would go, it did end up being a success. So I look back at that, also hoping to chat with Ernie Johnson, who runs the TNT studio show that's going to be recording live from the Plaza prior to Game 1 and Game 2 of the Eastern Conference Finals, right in front of Pfizer Forum. So he was from Milwaukee. His dad played for the Milwaukee Braves and was a broadcaster for the Braves. Even as they left for Atlanta, he went with his family to Atlanta once the franchise relocated. So that's a fun conversation as well. Hoping to have that up on the site by the time you're listening to this podcast or shortly thereafter. Thanks for tuning in, everybody, on the Milwaukee Bucks Journal Sentinel podcast. Obviously, we'll be coming at you again as soon as we can, hopefully after Game 2, to check in on where we are so far. Talk to you later.